The Witness of Creation Book Series by Billy Crone. Part 2, A Young Creation. Chapter 11, The Evidence of Space.
He was born May 21, 1960, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And at first, things seemed normal with this young man, until he started impaling the heads of animals he killed on stakes in his yard. But that was just the beginning. As an adolescent, he started having fantasies of killing and mutilating men. Soon fantasy gave way to reality and his first murder was Ohio, in 1978. Then a second murder followed in 1987 and soon he killed another 15 young men, most of them in Milwaukee, over the next 5 years. His gruesome crimes not only involved the murder of men but homosexual acts with them involving cannibalism and necrophilia. And to dispose of his crime, he had a 57-gallon drum where he put the bodies in vats of acid, reduced them to a black sludge, and then poured down a drain or flushed them down a toilet. Oh, but that's not all. Sometimes he would boil their heads and spray them with paint to make them look fake and then keep the skulls in the closet. Or sometimes he would cut off parts of their bodies and put them into jars of formaldehyde. But in 1991 he was finally arrested and in February of 1992 he was sentenced to 15 consecutive life terms. However, on November 28, 1994 he was murdered by another one of his inmates in prison.
And it was this man's gruesome actions that placed him among the most notorious serial murderers of all time. His name, of course, was Jeffrey Dahmer.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say if ever there was a guy who needed to get saved, and have all his sins forgiven, it was Jeffrey Dahmer. How about you? But you might be out there thinking what many people think, even Christians, and that is this. Come on, man. There's no stinking way God can save somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer. I mean, gee whiz, give it up. There's no way he would ever turn to Jesus Christ after what he did. It's hopeless. Therefore, why even try witnessing to a guy like that? He'll never respond to the gospel, right? Oh, really? I'll tell you what. I'm going to share with you the actual transcripts of an interview on the Larry King Live Show where Larry King interviewed Jeffrey Dahmer's father. And you tell me if all hope was lost.
How old was he?
33. And for the second time I sat at my desk, totally numb, paralyzed, to get the news.
How was Jeff dealing with prison?
At first it was extremely hard, but then he sent away for 13 books. It's down in El Cajon, California, Institute for Creation Research. I told him about the place. And he bought 13 books that turned him from an evolutionist into a creationist and from there into a Christian. And he started handing out pamphlets and talking with other prisoners and so forth, trying to.
So he was a born again?
He was, I'm sure, in talking with him, it wasn't just a jailhouse conversion. I really believe that.
Because he wasn't going to get out?
No.
We'll be back with our remaining moments, find out some things we might learn from this, after this. We're back with our remaining moments. Do we know why he killed?
Well, we don't know why he killed. I really believe there was a chance of finding that out, had he not been murdered and he had been studied extensively.
Could have been inability to interact with people?
That's part. Even the psychiatrist that examined him for the purpose of the trial didn't really know why he did it. But he did tell me why he felt that he could do what he did. Why he felt free to do what he did. He told me that, and this was after reading the books on creation science, he felt that he was up from the slime, as he put it. You know, molecules to amoebas to Larry type of a thing, evolution. That there was nothing, no direction by a god. No one to be accountable to. No one to answer to at all.
That's what he believed.
That's what he felt. That's why he felt he could just do whatever he wanted to. That's quite different from knowing the cause.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say it sure sounds like Jeffrey Dahmer, yes, Jeffrey Dahmer, actually gave his life to Christ, how about you? And who in the world would have ever thought that a real live actual cannibal would one day actually become a Christian? And as amazing as that is, here's the point I want you to focus upon. What was that turned him around? What witnessing technique helped Jeffrey Dahmer turn his life over to Jesus Christ? It was what? It was the creation versus evolution debate, right? I mean, who in the world would have ever thought of that one, right? I guess it really is a powerful way to share the gospel. And people, the reason why this is such a powerful way to share the gospel is because of what we saw with the case of Jeffrey Dahmer. What did he say was his rationalization for doing the evil things he did? It was what? It was the belief that there was no God and therefore he had nobody to be accountable to, right? And what did he admit with his own lips? Where does this line of thinking come from? It comes from evolution, right? Gee, maybe we shouldn't call it not evolution but evolution, you know what I'm saying? Gee whiz, it seems to evolve, all right, it evolves evil behavior. And gee, I guess that's why we need to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And what we've been doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And so far we've seen the first evidence God left behind for us showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And in the last 10 chapters we saw 11 evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world, and that was the evidence of the universe, the evidence of the solar system, the evidence of the human body, the evidence of the animal kingdom, the plant and bacteria kingdoms, the evidence of symbiosis and genetic similarities, and then in the last chapter we saw how even science shows evidence of God's intelligent design. But people, believe it or not, did you know an intelligent creation is not the only evidence that God has left behind for us showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe? The second evidence He's left behind for us is a young creation. But that's right, let's not take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Mark 10:1-9. Jesus then left that place and went into the region of Judea and across the Jordan. Again crowds of people came to Him, and as was His custom, He taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested Him by asking, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? What did Moses command you?" He replied. They said, "Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away. It was because your hearts were hard that Moses wrote you this law," Jesus replied. "But at the beginning of creation God made them male and female. For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore what God has joined together, let man not separate."
Now folks, according to our text, the Bible is clear. Jesus was answering a question concerning marriage and in the process of doing so he went right back to what? The account of the very first man and woman, Adam and Eve, right? And we don't know exact day when Adam and Eve were created, but some scientists have determined that Adam must have been created in the afternoon. Why? Because it's obvious, he was created just before Eve. But seriously, notice what else Jesus said in the text there about the very first marriage. He said it was the very first marriage because it was what? It was at the very first or literally beginning of creation, right? Therefore, here's the point. From the lips of Jesus himself, he declared that the literal account of creation in Genesis was the actual beginning, right? And people, if you add up the dates in the Bible you get an estimate of about 6,000 years. And so here's the obvious problem. Evolution teaches that we've been around not for a few thousand years, but what? Millions and billions of years, right? And therefore, the first problem I have with this as a Christian is, if you stop and think about it, evolution calls Jesus a liar. And folks, just like with the wrath of God, how many of you would say that's probably not a very good thing to do? And people, what you've got to understand is that this timing issue with evolutionists is not only calling Jesus a liar but it's the Achilles heel of the whole evolutionary theory. If they don't have tons of time, the whole thing falls flat on its face. In fact, time is the hero of their make-believe story, like George Wald, the late professor of biology at Harvard University, admitted.
Time is in fact the hero of the plot. The time with which we have to deal is of the order of 2 billion years. What we regard as the impossible on the basis of human experience is meaningless here. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible, the possible probable, and the probable virtually certain. One only has to wait, time itself performs the miracles.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'm so glad he used that word miracle because people, that's exactly what it's going to take to make evolution true. Hello? What did he say? Just given enough time, in a land far, far away, something mystical, something magical will surely take place, right? And folks, I don't know about you, but that kind of sounds like a fairy tale, don't you think? In fact, that's exactly what it is. But don't take my word for it. Let's recall what constitutes as a fairy tale. In a classic fairy tale, you usually start off with a frog. But not just any frog, it's a frog in a land far, far away. And one day this frog has a chance encounter with a princess. But not just any old princess, apparently one that likes frogs enough to kiss them. And then upon this so-called enchanted chance of a kiss, voila! Something mystical, something magical takes place. The frog turns into a prince, right? Folks, whether you realize it or not, this is the exact make-believe reasoning of evolution. Only their frog is time, far, far away time, that somehow produces through a chance encounter between a lightning bolt and a soup made from rocks, and voila. We have all of life as we know it. Now, I don't know about you, but that sure sounds like a fairy tale to me. But you might be thinking, hey, that's your opinion. I'm sure evolutionists have got this timing thing down to an exact science. I mean, it all over the textbooks, magazines, and TV. There's no way in the world they're making it up as they go along like a fairy tale. Oh, really? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll let you be the judge. Let's take a look at the evolving dates of the evolution theory and their supposed age of the universe, and you tell me if this is an exact science.
The evolution of the age of the universe. 1650, Bishop James Usher calculated a creation day of Sunday, the 23rd of October 4004 BC. About 6,000 years ago. 1760, 75,000 years old. 1831, 240 million years old. 1897, 400 million years old. 1905, 500 million 1.64 billion years old. 1928, 2 billion years old. 1947, 3 billion years old. 1952, 1 to 10 billion years old. 1987, 8 billion years old. 1995, 12 billion years old. 1997, 13 billion years old. 1999, 13.4 billion years old. 2001, 14.8 billion years old. Current, 15 billion years old.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say that's not a very stable timeline. How about you? I mean, gee whiz, at least Jesus sticks to one story, hello. But people, believe it or not, that's still just the tip of the iceberg. Let's move from this unstable supposed scientific timetable to some solid scientific facts, showing us that Jesus is no liar. And the first scientific evidence showing us that Jesus is not a liar but evolution is the evidence from space. Let's take a look.
1. Star clusters. A star cluster contains hundreds of thousands of stars moving and held together by gravity. But in some clusters, the stars are moving so fast that they could not have held together for millions or billions of years. They should have long since unclustered themselves. Star clusters tell us that the age of the universe should be measured in thousands of years. 2. Supernovas. When big stars run out of fuel, they explode and are what we call supernovas. According to astronomical theory, in galaxies of our size, approximately 7,250 supernova remnants should be visible. Using the creationist age of the galaxy, we should expect to find between 125 and 200 supernova remnants. The actual number of supernova remnants visible from the Earth is 205, which is very close to the creationist numbers. 3. The existence of comets. The numbers of comets are decreasing due to decay. Since they are continually disintegrating, and a number are known to have broken up, evidently all of them self-destruct within a relatively short time period. It is believed that the life of a comet lasts about 10,000 years. Yet, we still have comets. Therefore, the universe needs to be measured in thousands of years. 4. The amount of hydrogen. Hydrogen is constantly being converted into helium throughout the universe. If the universe were billions of years old, there would be no, or almost no, hydrogen left. Yet, noted professor of astronomy, Fred Hoyle, revealed, the universe consists almost entirely of hydrogen.
This yields to the inevitable conclusion that the universe is quite young. 5.
Planets and moons spinning backwards. Evolutionists believe that the universe started with a big bang that came from a small spinning dot. If this happened, then all of the particles and matter being expelled from this spinning dot would all have to spin in the same direction as the dot they exploded from.
This is a known law of science called the law of conservation of angular momentum.
So therefore, all things should be spinning in the same direction. But Venus, Uranus, and Pluto rotate backwards. In fact, all 138 moons in the solar system should orbit their planets in the same sense, but more than 30 have backward orbits. Furthermore, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune have moons orbiting in both directions. Maybe the universe didn't start with the Big Bang spinning dot and instead with our big God's spoken word a few thousand years ago. 6. The planet's rings. The rings of Saturn and Jupiter are primarily composed of ammonia and pebbles of various sizes. Scientists are trying to figure out why these rings are still there, because they should have been vaporized into outer space long ago and or destroyed by meteoroids. Also, Jupiter's magnetic field should have swept them out by now. Furthermore, the rings of Saturn are distinctly bright. The debris left behind by comets should have caused those rings to turn dark, but Saturn's rings aren't dark, they're bright, as though they haven't been around for very long. 7. The planet's cooling. Jupiter and Saturn are cooling off rather rapidly. They are losing heat twice as fast as they are gaining it from the Sun. If they were billions of years old, they should be stone cold by now, but they are still hot. Just like a coffee cup sitting on a coffee table. 8. The appearance of Venus. The high surface temperatures on Venus, combined with other surface features, support a young age for Venus. Also, if the planet was 4 billion years old, as taught by the evolutionary theory, its dense atmosphere should long ago have worn away all the craters. In fact, Richard A. Kerr said in an article, "Venus is looking too pristine." Science, 250-913, 1990, the Venus flybys have shown that planet to be young in the extreme. When they read the geological clock that tells them how old the Venusian surface is, they find a planet on the brink of adolescence. 9. The appearance of Mars. Mars also cannot be billions of years old, because in only a few thousand years of the type of harsh dust storm weather occurring on Mars would have seriously eroded away its many craters and volcanoes. Also, this long-term erosion should also have obliterated the strong color differences on the surface. 10. The Sun's solar wind. Like a giant vacuum cleaner, the Sun sweeps up almost 100,000 tons of inflow per day, while at the same time the Sun's radiation pressure pushes small dust particles outward into space. This phenomenon is known as the Poynting-Robertson effect. If the solar system is really billions of years old, then the solar system should have been swept clean by now. Yet these microparticles are abundant. Therefore, our solar system must still be quite young. 11. The size of the Sun. The Sun has been discovered to be shrinking in size, which means it used to be bigger. If the solar system was 4.6 billions of years old, the Sun, shrinking at a constant rate of about 0.1% per century, would have been so big to have made life implausible on Earth. An increased gravitational attraction would have pulled the Earth and other planets into it. In fact, as little as 50,000 years ago, the Sun would have been so large that our oceans would boil, and in far less time, 25,000 years or so, all life on Earth would have been barbecued. 12. The presence of isotopes on the Moon. Isotopes known as U-236 and Th-230, which are short-lived, were found in lunar materials. If the Moon were of a vast age, these isotopes would have long since decayed and would be absent from samples. However, they are in relative abundance. The age of the Moon is demonstrated in thousands of years, not millions or billions. 13. The Moon's gas must be the cheese. Small amounts of several inert gases have been found on the Moon. At today's intensity of solar wind, the amount of inert gases found on the Moon would reach their full amount in less than 10,000 years, and no longer. 14. The Moon's distance. The Moon is moving away from the Earth at a rate of about 2 inches per year. That means it used to be closer. First, the Moon's gravitational pull on the Earth results in tidal activity, which even a few million years ago would have been so close that the tides would have destroyed the Earth twice a day. It's been clinically proven that you can only drown once a day. Secondly, the more time you add, the closer the Moon gets, which would have been catastrophic to life on Earth. Maybe this is what killed off the dinosaurs. They got mooned. At least the tallest ones anyway.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but those scientific facts about space are not just interesting. I'd say they're pretty hard on the old evolutionary theory. How about you? And people, what you got to keep in mind is this is the Achilles heel of evolution. They've got to have vast amounts of time to get you and I to fall for their old fairy tale. Without tons of time, the whole thing crumbles to the ground. And remember folks, All it takes is just one of these scientific facts to ruin the whole theory, doesn't it? So in light of the evidence, I'd say it's time for somebody to get a new theory, how about you? But you might be thinking, hey, that's your opinion. Okay, so maybe they got this universe thing wrong, but I'm sure when it comes to the Earth itself, they've got this timing thing down to an exact science.
Oh, really? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll let you be the judge. Let's take a look at the evolving dates of not just the universe, but also the Earth. And you tell me if this is timing thing an exact science.
But we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.